Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respects to elders past, present, and emerging of the Kulin Nation. We recognize their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast. Today is Tuesday, the 16th of September, 2025. And thank you to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio today we've got Elena and Juliet. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
That was really nicely synchronized. That was beautiful. How are we going this windy morning?
Less cold, so that's a big win.
That's
for
a
me.
Huge win, yeah, for sure. And lighter. Getting yes. lighter, which is really nice.
I saw people running in the park this morning and I was like, whoa.
Good morning.
I could do that if I wanted to, but I won't.
Could you run to radio?
You could.
You could, yeah.
You could in theory.
Yeah, I feel like as soon as anyone gets a whiff of it being spring, like warmer, lighter, people are out there.
Yeah.
Doing activities.
Yes, the motivated amongst us.
Yeah, I think some people are ready. Are either of you embracing the warmer weather yet? Are we doing anything that we like haven't done in months?
Started wearing only one layer of pants instead of two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
That's a huge move.
It's a huge move. Way less laundry. Yeah.
I actually wore my summer pajama shorts to bed last night.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So we're really embracing it.
Yeah.
Huge shifts, everyone. Yeah. This is great.
What about you, Fung?
I took a risk yesterday and did not bring a jacket. Because I was like, it's going to be 20-something.
Yeah.
And it felt like the right move, so... here we go, you guys, if you're listening. This is how the Tuesday Breakfast team is welcoming warmer weather, one layer of clothing at a time, which is great. Okay, let's have a chat about what's coming up on today's show. So we're starting off by replaying an excerpt from the latest episode of Women on the Line, where Carnegie spoke with Rabble co-director Emma about their new show Unwoman, in brackets The Protest, which is a durational artwork which celebrates the multitude of experiences around birth, fertility, and pregnancy. So we're going to play that, and just letting you all know that we will be making a call out if anyone is interested in participating in their upcoming performance. So stay tuned at 7:15 for that interview. And then at 7:30, we'll be replaying part of an interview that Tilda and Jordan from 3CR Slacker Radio had with Maze Wallen of the Game Workers Union, which is really interesting. So they spoke about the union, its formation, as well as a local co-op of game workers and other digital creatives who are getting active in the space. So that's at 7:30.
And then at 7:45, we're going to listen to a conversation with artists Ella May, Conroe Fitzgerald and Sam Keneally about their current exhibition entitled A Seat at the Table, which is taking place up in Mianjin. And then at 8 a.m. we're going to be chatting to Noor from Unassigned Gallery and Teddy from Lesbian Mud Wrestling about their upcoming collaboration in the form of a fundraiser for Palestine taking place this week.
And then we'll be interviewing Kate Colvin, the CEO of Homelessness Australia. Previously, the spokesperson for the National Housing and Homeless Campaign, Everybody's Home.
So stay tuned. We've got a massive show coming up for you today. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty now. One, two, nitty gritty now, yeah. Boom.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and these are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 16th of September, 2025. A major body of new research released by the federal government yesterday reveals more Australians will likely die from heat-related issues and millions are at risk of coastal flooding driven by climate change. The National Climate Risk Assessment shows no Australian community will be immune from climate risks that it said will be, quote, cascading, compounding, and concurrent. Hazards such as coastal floods, heat waves, droughts and bushfires are projected to occur more frequently, more severely, and often at the same time, with a report warning Australia, a landmass that warms much faster than oceans, will reach a given warming level much faster than the globe. The report comes as Australia's highly anticipated 2035 emissions reduction target is expected to be revealed in the coming days. Climate Council Chief Executive Officer Amanda McKenzie said the findings should be highly concerning for our ministers. She insists that the first step is legislating the strongest possible 2035 climate target and stopping new polluting projects.
In other news this week, Qatar's Prime Minister has urged the international community to reject double standards and hold Israel accountable. He was speaking on the eve of an emergency summit called in response to an unprecedented Israeli strike on Hamas in Doha last week. The deadly attack last Tuesday, carried out by one United States ally on the territory of another, sparked a wave of criticism, including a rebuke from US President Donald Trump, who nonetheless dispatched his Secretary of State Marco Rubio to Israel in a show of support. Israel's strike on Qatar, capital, killed five Hamas members and a Qatari security officer. Monday's emergency gathering of Arab and Islamic leaders will serve as a pointed show of unity among Gulf countries and seek to put more pressure on Israel, which is already facing mounting calls to bring an end to the war and humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Qatari Premier Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani told a preparatory meeting on Sunday, "What is encouraging Israel to continue is the silence, the inability of the international community to hold it accountable."
Also in the news, Health Equity Matters, the National Federation for Australia's LGBTQIA+ Health, has reported that the latest national HIV surveillance report shows that while new HIV diagnoses have increased slightly in the past 2 years, the overall trajectory remains strongly positive. Diagnoses are still well below levels seen a decade ago, with numbers halved since 2014. Dash Heath Painter, CEO of Health Equity Matters, says Australia was coming off a period of unusually low diagnoses during the COVID-19 pandemic, when both risk behavior and testing rates dropped significantly. Mr. Heath Painter said that the data released today by the Kirby Institute also highlighted persistent inequities that have been that must be addressed to ensure no one is left behind. While HIV diagnoses have more than halved among Australian-born people over the past decade, for people born overseas, no reduction has been observed. He identified the need to implement health services co-designed with the communities they serve as the best way to raise awareness of HIV, increase use of proven prevention strategies, encourage testing, and improve access to care. In other news, as Pacific Islands Forum leaders gather in Honiara last week, Pacific communities are demanding the forum leaders to end the silence and act on the escalating humanitarian crisis unfolding in the region. The recent forced transfer of four West Papuan prisoners from Sarong to Makassar for the crime of engaging in peaceful negotiations has been widely condemned as a calculated tactic to isolate, intimidate, and silence pro-independence voices. The transfers come amid a surge of militarized violence in Sarong last week, where Indonesian police opened fire on peaceful protesters and arrested 30 people. West Papua is facing a full-blown humanitarian crisis. As of mid-August this year, over 100,000 people in West Papua remain internally displaced due to ongoing military operations and armed conflict between Indonesian security forces and the West Papua National Liberation Army. The scale and duration of the violence meets the threshold of a non-international armed conflict, yet receives little international scrutiny. Australia's silence at the recent Australia-Indonesia 2+2 meeting, where human rights were conspicuously absent from the agenda, further exposes the gap between rhetoric and responsibility. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 16th, September 2025. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
South liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo!
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. And we are going to start today's show by replaying an excerpt from Women on the Line that aired yesterday. So yesterday, Carnegie spoke with Emma Valente, who is from The Rabble, which was formed in 2006 by Kate Davis and Emma from a desire to make work that wasn't being produced in Australia. Visually ambitious, political, feminist, and formerly experimental theatre. So in yesterday's discussion, Carnegie spoke with Emma about their new show, Unwoman, or The Protest in brackets, a durational artwork celebrating the multitude of experiences around birth, fertility, and pregnancy. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
So The Rabble is doing a performance for Fringe Festival next month called Unwoman, The Protest. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, in 2018, we, together with an Irish artist, we made a work called Unwoman, which was a theatre show, and which was also premiered in 2019 in Melbourne at the Substation. And that show was about bodily autonomy around pregnancy and birth, and really trying to sort of reinvent the what it means to be pregnant, or like what is the pregnant silhouette, and what are the different ways we can kind of smash the assumptions around this silhouette. And the show was in three parts, and in between each part, we had a 14-year-old read out a real testimony that people had sent into us around their experiences of birth, of pregnancy, of abortion, miscarriage, fertility, everything you can think of. And she just read them out, and it just, in between the parts of the theatre show, and it just struck us how different the testimony was, how many different kinds of experiences people had, and how desperately people wanted to express these experiences and opinions, and that there wasn't really many spaces where they could do that. And even some people felt like it was taboo to talk about even miscarriage or abortion, even with their very close friends, much less in a kind of public setting. And so when we were making that show, we imagined an event where people could say this kind of testimony in real life. So that's what we're doing. We've kept the show name, Unwoman, but in brackets, we're calling it a protest, where we're giving people the opportunity to say a very short testimony around their experiences with this subject matter. And it's a durational event. It goes for around about 4 hours. We expect to have about 200 participants. And we've got about 100 so far. So we're really excited. And for an audience, people will come along and hear the testimony, and there'll also be sort of musical interludes and breaks for like respite, I guess. But we think like hearing these stories one after another will give people a real insight and understanding into the kind of multitude of experiences. And it will hopefully go some way to breaking down the conceptions we have.
Yeah, I think for me, when I read about Unwoman, for me it hits really close to home, because my partner and I are a queer couple, and we, you know, did IVF, and we had a very different experience to a lot of people around us to have a baby. And through all that, we were very happy to chat about it all. We were very vocal about it all, the ups, the downs, the kind of hardships, the stuff that was easy. And we found that it was always met with a bit of silence from people who had their own experiences, from people who didn't, like just across the board. So, yeah, I guess I wanted to ask, why do you think that talking about the spectrum of experiences is so contentious? Like, why is there so much silence around it?
I think that there's such a huge societal expectation around parenthood and what it should be like and how you should feel about it and how it should go. Right from conception, this is how it should go. And I think when people have difficulty or encounter tragedy even, they feel like they have failed in some way. Maybe they feel like their body has failed. Maybe they feel like they've done something wrong. And there is so much judgment around how it should be done. What are the processes? And this continues right through parenthood. And this is how a family should look. And these are the people that should be involved in how a family is made up, and also the laws and the medical system are just reinforcing this, even with the language that they use, and birthing classes, and people get assume that they have to do it a certain way, including wanting to have children in the first place. And I should say that this is open to everyone over the age of 16, all genders, all experiences. You don't have to have a uterus. You don't have to have children. You don't have to want to have children. We want to hear from absolutely everyone. You might be 16 and going, I have no idea yet. And all of that is, we want to include all of that. But I feel like the intensity of the emotion and the expectation around birth and fertility is so huge that people actually just don't want to talk about it in case they encounter judgment or in case they accidentally open up something that's painful for someone as well.
You know, there's been a huge issue with midwife burnout in Australia because midwives are just kind of not being listened to, and there's so much focus on the medical experience as opposed to like the experience of the birthing person, or trusting yourself, trusting your instinct. And I just wonder about that as well, like the whole spectrum of experiences has kind of been removed from the self almost. Like you're saying, it's about societal expectations and it's about, you know, fitting into, I guess, really heteronormative or like really small little like made up norms.
Yeah, exactly. Even the assumptions that might come along with in a queer couple about who is birthing the child and the way that people get spoken to in the medical system just reinforces those kind of often the kind of heteronormative assumptions. But also the medical system can be quite scary, and it can be really difficult to advocate for yourself or even get different kinds of information about the different ways things might happen and what you have to do and what you don't have to do. And I think that, like, hopefully this event can help that a little bit with just such an extensive kind of sharing of knowledge and understanding and experience. People who watch it or even people who are in it can see the different pathways that might be available.
Absolutely. What do you think from your experiences, from your conversations with people and from the previous performances you've done along these lines, what are some of the experiences that are often missing from sort of mainstream discourse or just experiences that are not commonly discussed?
I think it's changing a little bit now, but in 2019, being like having a uterus and not wanting children was incredibly taboo. And I think that people were often having to sort of defend themselves over and over and over again. I think that abortion and miscarriage and stillbirth are still incredibly taboo subjects and things that people find incredibly difficult to find a place to talk about and find a community to talk about it with. I think that the experience that you described of sometimes talking about things, even the hard things, and people's just sort of glazing over or maybe like getting scared, not knowing what to say. I think we need to like practice these kinds of conversations as communities and get used to that like difficult and uncomfortable feeling. So there are a few things that people were really, really wanted to speak about. Also, like just different ways of making family, and people just saying, I am so happy being an auntie. I have an amazing relationship with my nephews and nieces, or like I'm a step parent and I didn't think I wanted children, but now I'm in this position where I'm getting to experience this in a different way, or you know, there's four or five of us in a house that are making a family together, and there's a couple of kids, but we have different relationships. And that, I guess, having intimate relationships with young people doesn't necessarily require you to have genetics in the game.
Exactly. And that's such a big part of queer family making.
And it's not, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, the be all and end all of being a parent. It's more about who shows up and who gives love.
That was Carnegie from 3CR's Women on the Line speaking to Emma Valente from The Rabble. As mentioned earlier, Unwoman, the protest, is a durational artwork celebrating the multitudes of experiences around birth, fertility, pregnancy, and parenting. It's an inclusive work for all people and all experiences. It will be staged at Federation Square on October 5th as part of the Melbourne Fringe Festival, and The Rabble is actually looking for participants. So if you are interested in sharing any experience at all around pregnancy, birth, never wanting a baby, making a queer family, IVF, and everything in between, please get in touch. You can contact them at Rabble Theatre, that's RABBLE Theatre on Instagram, or by going to therabble.com.au and clicking on Unwoman. And before our next segment, we're going to play a song. This one was the debut song from Yara, Naam-based Palestinian songwriter. It is called Man Hater.
With all my freedom, I need you to do it right. Keep trying to give me a reason to give up without a fight. And you call me a man hater. Oh, man hater. Man hater. Man. A man hater. Oh, man hater. With all my demons, I'm keeping peace with all my mind. Keep trying to give me good reasons to give up without a fight. And you call me a man hater. Oh, man hater. Man hater. Oh, man. Man hater. Oh, man hater.
Speak for myself, worth of my word is how I measure the weight of my wealth. Women of the world, if you're wondering, it's time to raise hell. Won't go quietly whispering, pretty happy, just risking it. Don't wage war at the glass boys on your roof. When they fall and shatter, the one to catch them is you. Sharpen your weapons of wit, fill the cracks in the fault line. Tell them you don't get to decide whether my body is mine. Sister, I still sing in the blues. Don't you know my heart beats the same rhythm as you? When you're complicit, then the misters make you dance to that tune. Even the odds make you accept us if they win and we lose. Sister, I still The song is for we. Let me vibe with your divine feminine energy. Give me your hand, we rise, we transcend the hurt. Lend me your voice, revolutionize this women's work.
Don't know how many times you've left me hurting, sad and angry. I never said I hate you, so maybe stop your hating, baby. It's hard enough without my demons, so need to do it right. Keep trying to give me excuses.
Man Hater by Yara. We are now going to play for you first part of an interview that Tilda and Jordan from 3CR's Slacker Radio did at the start of August with Mays Wallen of the Game Workers Union. In their conversation, they spoke about the union, its formation, and a local co-op of game workers and other digital creatives getting active in the space. And just an update, they did achieve 100 members by the 16th of August, which you'll hear more about in the interview. If you want to get involved with the co-op, you can check out their website by going to sabby.gallery. Sabby is spelled S-A-B-B-Y. And there you'll find lots of information about how to get involved as well as their upcoming events. Later in the interview, they also discuss some of the other challenges faced by creatives in the industry, especially gender diverse workers in the field.
We have been joined by guest of the show, our guest, Mays Wallen. Welcome.
Welcome. Thanks so much for having me. It's really cool to be here.
It's so cool to have
it's
you in here.
Absolute pleasure.
Been kind of circling each other online for quite some time now,
yeah.
Meeting up in IRL meet space, as the kids like to say.
Mm-hmm. How novel.
How novel. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Mays? You do like game workers union stuff.
Yeah.
You do workers cooperative stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. So I've been working in video games for 14 years now. And
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I started off in composition and then went in really into sound design and programming. And a lot of my career has been remote and online.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what that has meant is that I've gone really hard on community locally.
Mm-hmm.
I was really involved in like the kind of art game movement in Victoria around kind of 2013 to 16.
Yeah.
And then, when game workers kind of boiled around the world, bringing that back here in 2018, I was really passionate about that and making freelancers a big part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in Australia, we've got an industry of about 2,000 full-time equivalents.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners can't hear me say air quotes. but half of those people are contractors.
Yeah.
Or sham contractors, probably, a lot of them. And so when Tim Colwell, who's also a wonderful games person and journalist and now union worker over in Borley, Perth, he came down to a free play, which is a festival that's on at the moment of indie games, and said, we should start a union down here. And I was like, what about freelancers? Which, if you are a unionist, you'll hear that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big thing in my union, the MEAA.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just like gig work and casual work is just the norm in so many industries now. But I guess especially in Australia where there's not really big studios, you know, Bethesda or whoever.
They're coming back. There is a few now. And that was also a big part of the unionization push down here is that when all those studios left after 2008, the financial crisis, we got to start kind of creating our own culture.
Mm.
But then they all kind of trickled back. So we've got Sledgehammer, who make Call of Duty.
Oh, right.
We've got, quite a few, a lot of like DevOps and marketing, but still some studios. There's a couple of EA studios down here as well.
Right, there you go.
And some other bits and pieces, some megacorps owned by Keywords and things like that. But we don't need the American culture down here. Or USA culture. So there's a bit of trying to kind of ward that off a bit by getting us unionized and getting some density. So, in 2022, so 4 years later, we became an arm of Professionals Australia, which is like the STEM union for scientists and engineers and translators.
Yeah, we interviewed you guys back then.
Yeah.
Back when we were a different show.
So good.
Yeah.
It became a national trade union, which is great.
Yeah.
And really cool to be working with comrades at like Google and Atlassian and Canva and really energize each other in different ways. So it's very exciting.
It's really like one of the real powerhouses of production globally is that kind of skilled programmer kind of thing, which they're trying to chip away at with AI that doesn't work and all of that.
Let's make the show about that. Yeah.
We can.
If you want.
I think it's a cool combo because a lot of the people over there at those big FANG shows, they have pretty cushy jobs, you know.
Can you explain what FANG is?
Oh, no. I remember what that stands for.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google?
Is that it? Maybe. Yeah.
That feels good.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
The big ones. And, you know, they get paid like 250K, 400K, that kind of stuff. And it's like, they'll just retire on that early, and have shares and stuff forever because those companies just only get bigger. So they haven't wanted to rock the boat, or they've got, you know, gyms and buffets and chefs and everything over there.
All these little comfy concessions.
Yeah, all the beanbags you can eat in the break room.
Yeah, exactly. But when we get to little low-paid game workers who... It is funny when you go onto our union portals and you see what the software people get paid and what the game workers get paid. And it's literally three times more.
Mm. Yeah.
Like it's not even a joke, which is terrifying. But our energy kind of feeds off them, and them being around makes us take ourselves seriously as an industry. Yeah. And, you know, those beanbags are hiding something.
Yeah.
We should go in there with knives and open them all up. Get to the middle of this chewy little thing. Hey, what's Zabby?
That's kind of the next thing. Like we achieved 15% density with game workers, which is really huge for any industry.
That's huge, yeah.
And it was like very quick.
Private sector, we're like below 8%, like the density.
Yeah.
15 is about where the Victorian Public Service is.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good. Congratulations.
Yeah. And, you know, we had a really great succession plan. New conveners took over, new energy. They're doing things slightly different to me. So it's time for me to move on. And speaking of Google workers, a mate who used to be in games 13 years ago down here in and then moved overseas and started working for Google and went around the world. He came back and was like, I'm going to have a sabbatical. And he started Zabby Gallery.
Okay.
Turns out running a community is not very calm or sabbatical-like.
No, not at all.
said no one ever. But since then, the community's really taken over. And yeah. amazing comrade Null also took over as the next benevolent bankroller. But we have really outgrown that model where one person is in charge of the rent and ends up making the decisions and that kind of power dynamic. No matter how genuine you are, if you are the one with the money, you can't avoid that power dynamic. Yeah. So over the years of doing co-working events at this little gallery on Victoria Parade around the corner from here, and work in progress nights and Beyblade tournaments, a Beyblade vanquished, zine clubs, union meetups, little union hub of activity every games week and often before Palestine rallies and things, we've decided, all right, this is a community centre and we need to own it.
Yeah.
So we set this goal of 100 members by August 16, which is really soon.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
And how are you doing?
We're doing really well. We are 3/4 of the way there, is insane.
That's so exciting.
It's really surreal. It does make me think of when we achieved density at the Union, and I was like, what does that mean? Any studio I go to is probably going to have someone who's got my back. Like, what does that?
Yeah.
That wasn't at the start of my career at all. It was the opposite. So
we love a win. We love a dub.
We're really close, and I think at this point that we can't fail and that we'll go ahead, which is
scary. That's so
to
exciting.
Say on radio.
Yeah, you can't take it back now.
Yeah, I think
there's
it's official.
Dozens of people listening.
Yeah. There's at least probably 25, right?
Yeah.
They'll all join.
Yeah.
Savvy.gallery, SABBY.gallery/join. And
so that space is, the idea is that's going to be owned by this workers' cooperative.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
All the purposes you were talking about before, like
getting
together and working and making games and holding union meetings and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And it's been sick. So a few weeks ago, we were trying to figure out the age range of Savvy, because I'm pretty established in my career, but there are people who are really new. There's 19-year-olds at Savvy up to 50 years old, and I'm somewhere in the middle.
30 or 40 years old.
Yeah.
Normal age.
And being able to see everyone at different stages of their career, lots and lots of trans and queer people and people of colour, and lots of different abilities, all of the different isms. It's just really a melting pot. And also seeing how people's priorities in this games so-called industry and arts community are different. Seeing, you know, for me, it's very normal to be like, okay, in this country, you go for Vic Screen and Screen Australia funding. And then once you do that, you go for publisher and platform funding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, what if I don't want to do that? What if I want to make games a different way? Or what if I want to run my life a different way? And it's great to see the different ways that people are doing things.
Yeah, totally.
It makes me a little bit emotional.
In a really worker-centered way as well. Like, yeah, there's no, workers own the shop. Workers can choose the way they produce their goods. That's amazing.
And it's, you know, I feel like it's another kind of drop in the bucket of decorporatizing, if that's a word.
I'd say so.
The games and creative industries and kind of taking it back a bit, because we need this stuff to live.
And yeah, I think the industry sorely needs that. I'm kind of, I don't know, one of these boomer retro gamers. And there's just a time when the games industry was like this new thing and nobody really knew what it was, and everyone was like throwing stuff at the wall, which has been, like, you see it in cinema as well lately, like everything has to be so safe and sure to return the, you know, the billions of dollars has been put into it. That's the only way you make a game. It's the only way you make a movie, is just pour billions of dollars into characters that people already know.
Make the same thing
Make a sequel or make a remake or remaster something. And yeah, I think if we're ever going to get that kind of like creative, weird stuff that we, you know, used to see everywhere, it takes like, yeah, people working in weird and wonderful ways and trying out ideas that would just get thrown out in a corporate boardroom situation.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
And I think it's, you know, it's a really global movement. We're seeing, you know, unionization around the world come up and, you know, independent games journalist houses in Australia. The last one I saw was This Week in Video Games has just started from people who are at Games Hub and other people. And their work are owned as well, which is really cool. And I think as much as the pull towards corporate oligarchies is strong, I feel like there is a pull in the other direction as well. Wow. Yeah.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, and that was Tilda and Jordan from Slacker Radio speaking to Maze Wallen of the Game Workers Union. And just a reminder, you can visit sabby.gallery by going to sabby.gallery. And Slack Radio is a show about radical unionism and local street movements. You can catch them on 3CR on Fridays, 5:30 to 6:30 PM, or at www.3cr.org/slackerradio.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and up next we've got a conversation between myself and artists LMA Conroe Fitzgerald and Sam Keneally. LMA is a Thai Australian video, photographic and installation artist based on Yugambeh country and is currently undertaking a residency with Next Wave. Sam is an artist, illustrator and designer based here in Nam with connections to the South Queensland region. And the two artists join me to chat about their current exhibition, which is called A Seat at the Table, which is now showing at Outer Space Gallery in Brisbane, Mianjin. Thank you so much, LMA and Sam, for joining us on Tuesday Breakfast today. We'll start off with you, LMA. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and introduce your art making practice?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me. So I'm an Australian Thai artist based on Yugambeh country, also known as the Gold Coast. And I would say that my practice spans across lens-based storytelling. So that includes like photographically, through video, also installation and participatory forms of making. And my practice is really influenced and inspired by my lived experiences growing up biracial on the Gold Coast and my connections to place. And I guess this is why I make work about and for the Asian diaspora. And yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for telling us about your practice, LMA. And yeah, I think, you know, art can be so central to our understanding of our identities and getting to explore, you know, who we are and where we come from. And Sam, yeah, can you also introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm a multidisciplinary creative working here in Nam, Melbourne. I work as a graphic designer, freelancer and signwriter. And then my personal arts practice tends to involve painting, animation, ceramics, and recently a bit of textiles and sculpture. And I guess similar to LMA, what drew me into wanting to explore art is as a way to better understand my identity and culture. A lot of my inspiration for my animations and illustration is definitely coming from a place of I suppose a bit of confusion of being mixed race, which I think a lot of mixed race people can identify with, but also the beauty in being able to share a mixture of cultures.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it sounds like, yeah, you both are exploring really multidisciplinary practices to, yeah, better understand your identities as mixed race or biracial artists. I think, you know, that really seems to speak to a lot of, you know, what's come together in your current exhibition in Brisbane, Mianjin. LMA, can you tell me a little bit about the premise of the exhibition and kind of how it came to be?
So A Seat at the Table really came about through an 18-month long artist residency that I did with Next Wave, which is an artist organization based down in Nam. And they have a program called the Kickstart Program, where they invite one artist from every state and territory in Australia. And we get to pretty much make our most ambitious work to date. I invited 7 Asian Australian participants that were based, either they have a connection to Southeast Queensland or they grew up there, so from Mianjin down to Bundjalung country. And I invited them to prepare, cook and share a meal with me in their home with a family member or a close friend. And I documented that process photographically through analog film. I recorded the conversations that we would have over the shared meal and the time that we spent together. And I also asked them to share handwritten recipes with me, whether that was in English or their own languages. Yeah, these tangible and intangible materials that I collected formed the exhibition, A Seat at the Table. And it runs until the 11th of October. So yeah, if anyone is in Queensland and wants to check it out, they can. It's on for 5 weeks.
Yeah, awesome. It sounds like a really collaborative process. Can you speak a little bit, LMA, to what the exhibition, you know, looks like physically? Yeah, how have you brought these different stories and experiences together in the gallery space?
So I guess as you enter the space, you are met with basically the gallery walls hold all of the photographic works, having this myriad, this collage of all these photographs and images really show this, it's sort of expanding and growing and transforming like a, you know, living, ongoing collective archive. Sort of as soon as you walk in, you also see a big central installation in the center of the space, which is a recreation of an outdoor kitchen, which a lot of people from the Southeast Asian diaspora would know very well. Other names for it is dirty kitchen or wet space. But basically, it's an extension of the house because I guess like with my grandmother's house and my step-grandmother's house based in Chiang Mai in Thailand, these are the spaces that you cook, prepare, gather, eat meals together, spend time together. And so I really wanted to bring a little part of myself in the space as well, but it is a recreation of that, but also a representation of where all of these engagements with each participant took place, which was in their homes, in their home kitchens. I wanted it to feel like a warming space, an inviting space. And you'll also see a little handheld radio that sits on top of a colourful, low plastic stool, similar to the street style stools that you find in Southeast Asia. And that is playing all of the conversations of the audio recordings. It invites people, draws them closer to sit in the installation space on the mats, on the cushions and to the exhibition. But I'd love Sam to speak a little bit to that as well.
Yeah, please do, Sam. Tell us about it.
Yeah, sure. So originally I was invited by LMA to be a participant in the exhibition to one of the creatives who shared a meal and prepared it with my dad. But from being a participant, I was then asked by LMA to collaborate a little bit further with the exhibition. We wanted to do something with the handwritten recipes that I thought they were just so special with everyone's unique handwriting, and a lot of them had been embellished with really cute little doodles and illustrations. So originally we thought we might sign write them quite large onto the wall, but due to the cleanup that's necessary after installation is done in a gallery and needing to return those walls to squeaky clean white, we thought maybe that wasn't the best idea. So instead, I had a little think about it and landed on the idea of using found objects, particularly food packaging, to then transcribe the recipes onto. So together, LME and I, using my cheeky little sign writing techniques, we took those recipes and we hand painted them onto biscuit boxes, spice packets, all kinds of things.
Yeah, wow. It sounds like, yeah, it would be such a dynamic installation, and yeah, people are able to engage with it, you know, on so many different levels. Visitors coming in and seeing the exhibition, what are some of the takeaways that you hope that they, take with them?
Yeah, I guess I hope that visitors, as soon as they walk into the space, it feels like home, or it transports them to a place of warmth, a place of belonging, and I also hope that they see themselves, you know, in these stories. It reminds them of their own kitchens or family kitchens, whether it be here in Australia or back in the motherland. And yeah, I guess as well, the choices of bringing the handwritten recipes, recreating them and translating them onto actual objects and packaging items, things that you would find at an Asian grocer, is immediately such, you know, a familiarity to these things that you immediately can find in your own homes or kitchens, or visiting different Asian grocers anywhere you go. Something recognizable.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, so often gallery spaces can feel quite sterile and, you know, really lacking that warmth and, you know, sense of homeliness as well. Sam, were there any final things that, yeah, you hope that people will take from coming to this exhibition?
Well, one moment when Ella May and I were at the opening on Friday that really made me want to cry was seeing someone who was experiencing the exhibition on the opening night lift up the bag of rice that was the part of the installation that my recipe was transcribed onto, and just hug it to their chest with the biggest smile on their face, and got their selfie taken a few times. And for me, that was just the pinnacle, I think, of everything that I was so lucky to work with LMA on, to see that it was hitting another Asian Australian to the point where she had to reach down and pick up the art, which is actually what we really wanted. We wanted people to touch the work. So the fact that it seems like it has really connected and it's brought so much joy, I just saw so many smiles.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And such an image to think of that kind of level of audience participation as well with the artwork is pretty amazing. Before we wrap up, LMA, would you be able to maybe just point to some places that people can go to online if they want to find out more about the exhibition?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess the first place is Outer Space Gallery, the website itself. And there are a couple of public programs coming up for anyone that is up in Queensland at that time. There is a participatory work and artist talk that is happening on the 4th of October, where I activate that outdoor kitchen that is the central installation in the space to cook congee. And that follows with an artist talk with Mariam Ella Arcilla, who's an incredible artist and arts worker based in Sydney.
Great. Well, thank you so much for both joining us on Tuesday Breakfast and chatting about this really wonderful exhibition.
No problem at all. Thank you so much, Juliet, for having us.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and that was a conversation between myself and artists LMA, Conroe Fitzgerald and Sam Keneally about their exhibition, A Seat at the Table, Exploring Connections Between Food, Family and Culture for Asian Australian Communities. You can find out more about the exhibition and upcoming public programming at www.outerspacebrisbane.org. And up next, we're going to play a song by Soul Child, a Mianjin-based Jamaican and Arendt artist. And this is her single, Heal Sister.
Heal Sister, Heal Sister. I know you can rise above. Be still, Sister. Tune in to all the wisdom of your heart. Let it all out. Is the love worth the pain? Was the sacrifice in vain? You've drowned your intuition. Then it all comes crashing down. All this conflict you're internalizing, emotions you keep denying. Sister, how much can a heart taste? Feel, sister, heal, sister. I know you can rise above. Be still, sister. Tune into all the wisdom of your heart. Let it all out. When the rain was pouring, I started calling, praying to Creator. Mother took the course and held me like an anchor. Saw through the depths and returned to my nature. Blessed and highly favored with my sisters. Open up my heart, I'm out here being all that I am, all that I can be. When you're gonna turn your pain to love, as if the sacrifice wasn't enough. When you're gonna start to surrender and trust, flowing like the feminine you are. See you, your strength, your pain, your sun, your rain, your will, smile again. We feel you through the ups and the downs, all your ins and your outs. Your queen, wear your crown. Feel, sister, heal, sister. Sister, I know you can rise above. Be still.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and up next we're going to be chatting to Noor Abdul-Latif, the founder and director of Unassigned Gallery, and Teddy Benson, founder and facilitator of Lesbian Mud Wrestling, and also a local artist and tattoo artist. Unassigned Gallery is a grassroots multi-purpose creative space in Brunswick, and Lesbian Mud Wrestling is a local initiative that raises funds for gender-affirming care. And Noor and Teddy are here to talk about Unassigned Gallery's exhibitions and upcoming events, teach us what Lesbian Mud Wrestling is, and also discuss their upcoming fundraiser for Palestine. But welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Noor and Teddy.
Thank you for having us, Tekiel.
Yeah, thank you so much for making the time. Maybe we'll start off with you, Noor. Can you tell us a little bit about Unassigned Gallery? When and why did it get started?
So I opened the gallery almost 3 years ago on October 14th. It'll be the three-year birthday. And it was like a dream that I had in the back of my mind for like years and years that I always thought that I like couldn't achieve. So I just kind of like never put too much serious thought into it. But I remember, yeah, I guess when I was like 20, 27 or 28. I remember it like really clicked in my mind that this is what I want to do, is open up a gallery that's like for the community, so gives more than it takes, and also like be in a position that allows me to just be a fangirl of every artist. That's kind of how it started. I just was like, I wish my job was to be a fangirl of people. Yeah, and then also just seeing, I guess being in the arts, I know a lot of people will relate to this, but just seeing how inaccessible the art world can be, which it just shouldn't be. And so, yeah, I thought, I just kind of got to a point where I was like, fine, I'll just do it myself. I'll just create the space that we all are thinking of.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's so awesome. And, yeah, often it is really what we need to do. You know, you do have to create that space that you want to see. And, yeah, totally hear you as well on the whole fangirl thing. I feel like me programming this show is just like, who's cool? Who do I want to talk to? And you guys are definitely one of those, those cool people who are like, I want to hear what you guys are up to. But, yeah, can you chat a little bit more about, like, you know, Unassigned's role in the community? Like, what is this? Who are the sort of artists that you're trying to platform and, make that space for through your programming?
So I think in like the most basic way of summarizing it, I think that I am trying to create a space for people who wouldn't always get those opportunities. And I think back at myself being like a 15-year-old queer Muslim and just not really being able to fit into any of those identities. And then I think to myself now, and I have so much privilege, and I'm just like, I just want to use that privilege to create space for people like a younger version of me at no matter what age they're at. So it doesn't really matter to me what like age someone is or what part of their career they're at. I think it's just, yeah, this automatic thing where some people will come to the gallery and really relate to it and really feel safe there, and that just clicks. And then other people might come and just be like, it's not really for me, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, and I guess they can always make their own galleries.
I personally think the more the better, because not everyone will relate to mine, and it would be awesome for them to be able to like just go down the road and find somewhere that's like safe and affirming for them.
Mm, exactly. And I know that Unassigned Gallery's been really active in running a lot of fundraisers for Palestine, and of course there's one coming up this weekend. But yeah, why is it really important for you as a community run gallery to be standing in solidarity with Palestine and running these events?
So I think that there's so much privilege being in the art world. I think that art is political, and it always has been political, and so it doesn't make sense to me that some people would say that art isn't political or shouldn't be. But from when I very first opened the gallery, or like was thinking about opening the gallery, I mean, I knew that the main thing would be that like my values would be the first thing that people would see, and then the gallery, because I don't think that you should walk into a space and then automatically have to kind of like hide your values, unless they're wrong, because there are some wrong values. And I can imagine that you can figure out what I'm saying.
No, I think, it is important to be upfront and, be putting, put your mouth. What's the saying? You know what I mean. Money where your mouth is. I'd love to hear a little bit about the upcoming fundraiser. And I know Teddy, you've got a big part in it. What is the lesbian fundraiser happening, and what is lesbian mud wrestling?
So, somehow through literally putting on a like mud wrestling, which was actually slime in my backyard almost a year ago, there's just been this insane cult following of beautiful lesbians of all genders who just want to see some beautiful women and people just like fight in mud. And I was like, okay, this is a sick thing. And for the first one, my housemate Sid was like, dude, we could raise money for like our friends
gender-affirming surgery. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay, cool. And then the first one happened. And then after it happened, there was just, like, this insane word of mouth. And then, yeah, we did the second one, and it was crazy. We raised, like, $9,000.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, which was, like, a art fundraiser and the lesbian mud wrestling thing. So, yeah, I got to help two of my friends, and they've, like, booked in dates for their surgeries, which is crazy. So, yeah. So lesbian mud wrestling is just a way to create dope community of a bunch of different types of people and allies to come together and spend money and watch beautiful people wrestle in the mud. So then, yeah, I was just sitting with, like, Noor and our friend Georgia, and we were like, hang on, why don't we just do, like, an art fundraiser for Palestine? We can just do that. Like, why not? So, yeah, and then because, like, you know, like, Unassigned Gallery and lesbian mud wrestling is just very gay and lesbian-pilled, I guess. So Georgia was like, oh, haha. Like, my friends were like, what about that big lesbian fundraiser for Palestine? And I was like, that's a dope name. So, yeah, it just kind of stuck.
Yeah. No, it sounds like, it's all come together and, I'm very intrigued to actually see what it looks like, and hopefully it will come out this weekend. But, can you guys tell us a little bit more about what's on the program for this weekend and, you know, how people can find out more about it?
Yeah, so the main part that we're focusing on is the silent auction, where we've got 70 artists. I want to say local because it's usually local, but we've had people send in work from around the world.
Yeah.
We have someone from the UK and someone from New York.
Which is crazy.
It's so crazy. Insane. Yeah. We're like, do you know we're a little gallery in Brunswick, Australia? So that is the main focus. We're really excited about that. The quality of work is incredible.
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah. So cool. We're going to have live music in the backyard, hopefully, weather permitting. Otherwise, we'll reshuffle. And yesterday we were like, let's do a freaking sausage sizzle.
Let's do a sausage sizzle.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be like the perfect combo of everything that we usually do. And I think the main thing is to kind of bring all the communities together, because I don't think you don't usually hear, like, I guess as an Arab, I don't usually hear, like, the word lesbian or gay or whatever mixed in with, like, Palestine or Arab or anything like that. So I think that, yeah, our ultimate goal is also just bringing our communities together.
Yeah, because they overlap heavily. Like,
oh, it's the same.
Yeah, every Sunday there's just so many queer people going to the rally. It's awesome. So it's kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's going to be a really jam-packed schedule and, so cool as well that you've had interest from all around the world to get involved with the fundraiser as well. Just really quick, where can people find, where should they go to online to find out about the event?
So if you go on the Unassigned Gallery Insta, unassigned_gallery, it's our pinned post. The poster was designed by Teddy.
Woo.
It's freaking awesome.
Yeah, featuring Noor.
We love it. We love a collab. All the info will be on Insta. If you want to follow the lesbian mud wrestling account, it's private for safety reasons. But, you know, Teddy checks who follows the account to make sure that that community stays safe. So it's also there on lesbian mud wrestling.
Yep, on Instagram.
Boom. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll have to send our listeners over to Instagram to find out more get involved with your awesome events. But thank you so much, both of you, Teddy and Noor, for joining us today on Tuesday Breakfast.
Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you. We'll have to have you guys back sometime soon. We've been speaking to Noor and Teddy about their upcoming fundraiser for Palestine taking place at Unassigned Gallery this Saturday. And you can find out more at unassigned_gallery on Instagram or also the private Instagram at Lesbian Mud Wrestling. Up next we're going to play a quick song for you.
Here I go, banging it. better swerve. Wrapping up my aura. Focus on my mind, taking my time. I'm a new woman. Bitch, you better swerve. Wrapping up my aura. Focus on my mind, taking my time. Yo puedo frontear, no por lo que tenga, siempre me la dan. Y mi energía inmaculada, bajo perfil y tú estás fuera. Yo pa' cantar, no canto pa' vivir, nací pura así. Ni una era se dan flop en mi porvenir. Puta, se la Rosalía, solo se serví. La noche estrella, así sea. Hasta la madrugada, que así sea. Bien seguro, acelero mi ahora. Yo estoy enfocada, no presiona nada. I'm a new woman, a new woman. Sale bien seguro, acelero mi ahora. Yo estoy enfocada, no presiona nada.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
That was New Woman by Lisa, and up next we'll have an interview from Kate Colvin, the CEO of Homelessness Australia. Previously, Kate was the spokesperson for the National Housing and Homelessness Campaign Everybody's Home and served as the deputy CEO for Victoria's Peak Body for Homelessness, the Council to Homelessness Persons. Kate is back on Tuesday Breakfast today to chat about new figures on child homelessness in Australia and specific challenges faced by youth seeking homelessness support. Thanks for joining us again, Kate.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Could you start by giving us an overview of the latest report by the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare regarding child homelessness?
Yeah, sure. So look, this is the first time that the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare has looked specifically at the group of children who come to homeless services without a parent or guardian. So what we can see is that we've got 13,000 across the country children each year coming, so 12 to 17-year-olds who are coming to homeless services, and most of them are fleeing family violence. So they're coming without a parent or guardian, mostly because they're, you know, feel like they're not safe in that environment, and they're coming, they've exited the home and end up, you know, in a homelessness service. And the tragic thing we can see in the data is that a lot of these children need to, they can't safely return home. They need a care environment or a, independent housing. And we can see that 2,800 of them needed medium-term housing and weren't able to get it. And almost 3,500 needed long-term housing and weren't able to get into that housing. And so this is children who then get stuck in homelessness.
What are the challenges or risks for children seeking homelessness support without a parent or guardian?
Yeah, great question, because look, the risks are really significant. So often we see children leaving a violent environment at home and then coming out of that environment, but not without any income, without any safe place to stay. They do end up exploited or in situations that are really unsafe and experiencing violence again while homeless. And so that's why it's so important to just, you know, as soon as young people present without that safe environment, to have them immediately in a safe environment and then work with them on what will work for them longer term. So for, particularly for younger children, you know, sort of 12 to 15-year-olds, that's a bit young to be living independently, but they could, get helped to identify someone in their networks who might be a safe place for them to stay, or if necessary, get into child protection and live in out-of-home care. But for older children, so 16, 17, if they do have the right support, they can live independently, but do much better if they do have support as well as housing. And that's why we need specialist youth housing for that group.
Yeah, that's really important. What is the youth housing penalty in the social services system?
Yeah, so this is an interaction of youth allowance with the Commonwealth Rent Assistance when young people are trying to access community housing or public housing. So you know that young people who are on social security benefits get youth allowance, and it's quite a lot less than job seeker payments. And so when you're going into public or community housing, you're paying just a proportion of your income in rent. So 25 or 30% of youth allowance, of course, is less than 25 or 30% of the job seeker payment. And when your eligibility for Commonwealth rent assistance is tested, there's a minimum threshold which is determined by how much rent you pay. So we have this anomaly where young people who are on the youth allowance pay so little rent in community housing, so it's a good thing because in that sense it's more affordable, but then they only get $5 a week of Commonwealth rent assistance. So overall, their rent that they're paying is a lot less than someone who's on JobSeeker, and about half what it would be if they were compared to someone who was on disability support pension or the age pension. And so what we see then is both public housing and community housing tend to discriminate against young people. They can take someone from the top of the wait list. It doesn't have to be the top person. It's from the top sort of 10 people or so at the top of the wait list. So there's generally someone on a higher income payment, and they will get the available place, and young people miss out. And we can see that because about 1 in 8 people who come to Homeless Services is an unaccompanied child or a young person, but only 3% of tenancies in social housing are occupied by that group. So they're definitely not getting their sort of fair access to community and public housing, and that's one of the reasons why that happens.
Yeah, sounds like it could be pretty dangerous. Can you speak a little bit on the Home Time campaign, and what are some of the demands of that campaign to reduce the rates of youth homelessness?
Yeah, so the Home Time campaign is an alliance of over 170 organisations, youth homelessness organisations, general homelessness, welfare organisations, who can see that there's these barriers to young people getting into the housing that they need, and have banded together to try and work to government to get them to change these policies. So what we're calling for is dedicated youth tenancies, so 15,000 dedicated youth tenancies, and that's because there's about 15,000 children and young people, so up to 24, who need that long-term housing and miss out on it each year. And part of the reason that we need dedicated funding for youth housing is because it's when there's funding rounds, like in Victoria, we've had the big housing build, and nationally we've had the Housing Australia Future Fund. Those funding rounds go to providers who will build housing for the least possible subsidy. But if you're building housing for young people, you need a higher subsidy because of that youth housing penalty I was describing before. So we need dedicated tenancies for those young people. And then another ask of the campaign is about those tenancies needing to have support linked to them. Because when you're 16 and you've had a, you know, terrible time at home, you've not had the opportunity to learn all of the things that you need to learn before you're ready to kind of live independently. And, you know, children at that age often need help to negotiate things at school, particularly if they're moving around. It can be really hard to stay at school without someone to help explain why perhaps your uniform's, you know, not all together, or help work out how you're going to get a new computer, because if you've moved schools, you might need a different computer to what you had before. All of those kinds of things. And then there's the transition into tertiary education. There's staying connected with health services. And also, these are children who've had a lot of traumatic experiences and need support, often to connect with mental health services or just support from social workers to, you know, just help to recover from that trauma. So there's the issue of support, which is really important. And then the third ask is about dealing with that income support issue, which I described before. And so we've focused particularly on the group of young people who are on the unreasonable to live at home payment, which is a payment you get in youth allowance if you're not safe at home. And we're trying to get that payment increased to be the job seeker rate.
Yeah, that's some really important information. Before we wrap up, are there any ways our listeners can support the Home Time campaign?
Look, people can join the campaign as an individual and support that way. That's really important to have that community support. So if you go to hometime.org.au, you can connect with the campaign and see more about the information behind it and the asks of the campaign and how to be involved, and including there's a link there to, you know, send an email to MPs to say, you know, you really think that there should be action.
Great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today. This has been really informative.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. We've been speaking to Kate Colvin from Homelessness Australia about new statistics on rates of youth homelessness, challenges faced by children in the homelessness system, and what support is needed.
And we've had a really massive show today. But before we wrap up, we're just going to run through some events taking place this week. So tomorrow, Wednesday, the 17th of September, from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m, there's the Stop Profiteering from Poverty rally taking place outside the Sofitel Melbourne on Collins, which we spoke to Jess from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union about this event last week. Then this Saturday, 20th of September, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. is the Big Lesbian Fundraiser for Palestine at Unassigned Gallery, 55 Edward Street, Brunswick. And then finally on Sunday, 21st of September, there's the 6:30 p.m. Gaza Solidarity Concert at the Corner Hotel in Richmond. But yeah, it's been a really great show today. So we started off at 7:15 chatting to, we listened to a conversation between Carnegie on Women on the Line with Emma Valente from The Rabble, which is, they put forward a durational artwork called Unwoman, the protest, which was about experiences of birth, fertility, pregnancy and parenting. Then at 7:30, we heard the first part of an interview between Tilda and Jordan from Slacker Radio with Maisie Wallen of the Game Workers Union, speaking about the union, its formation and the local cooperative of game workers and other digital creatives. Then at 7:45, we heard a conversation between Juliet and artists LMA Conroe Fitzgerald and Sam Keneally about their exhibition, A Seat at the Table, and discussed food, family and culture within Asian Australian communities. Then at 8 o'clock, we spoke to Noor Abdul-Latif and Teddy Benson about the upcoming Big Lesbian Fundraiser at Unassigned Gallery, and also in collaboration with Lesbian Mud Wrestling. And then finally at 8:15, we spoke to Kate Colvin, the CEO of Homelessness Australia, about new figures on child homelessness in this country and specific challenges faced by youth in seeking homelessness support. So yeah, it's been a really massive show today, and very excitingly, it was Elena's very first interview. So we're all very proud and yeah, excited for many wonderful interviews to come. And that's been our show today, the 16th of September. And stay tuned. Up next will be Accent of Women shortly after this, starting at 8:30.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find NIBS opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.